Good morning. Oh, well. So if you attended Ingo's presentation on HTML5, he and I co-conspired and tried to kind of mesh together what he did and what I'm doing. My name is Jeff Procise, and I'm going to do a session entitled Silverlight versus HTML5, an apples to apples comparison. I want to say more about why I'm doing this session, but let me give you a short preview of that right now. As I travel and work in different places, in Microsoft and outside Microsoft, I am constantly today asked the question, what's this whole thing, what's the deal about HTML5? Should I be investing in Silverlight, given that there's so much buzz around HTML5? Or why should I be using HTML5 when Silverlight does everything and more? And oh, by the way, is it true that HTML5 can do everything Silverlight can? And if so, isn't that a justification for using HTML5? Well, I'm going to answer all of those questions for you. But one thing I found is that there seems to be a lot of misperceptions out there about what Silverlight can and cannot do, about what HTML5 can and cannot do. So I thought it would be useful to do a presentation at this conference comparing the two head to head so you can see what they can do, what they can't do, and in terms of things they do together, how they do them, and how the relative merits compare. One thing I don't want to do is offer you an opinion this morning. I do have an opinion, and as a longtime Silverlight person, my opinion may surprise you just a little bit. What I'd like to do is lay these technologies out so that if at your company you are trying to decide, should I go with one or the other or both, you can at least make an informed decision rather than a decision based on myths and misperceptions. Unfortunately, I do see that being done at some companies. Hopefully, this will allow you to avoid doing that. Another reason I'm doing this session is that I didn't get invited to the royal wedding, so I thought, well, if I'm not going to be at the wedding, I may as well do a session here on Silverlight and HTML5. Actually, I called the palace. I was invited, they tell me, but somehow the invitation was lost in the mail on its way from the UK to the US. So I'll take their word for it, but I would rather be here talking about Silverlight and HTML5 anyway. So let's start talking about these things and comparing them. The first thing I want to talk about is the drawing APIs that they offer. You know, when you walk up to the average man on the street and say, tell me what you know about HTML5, they'll usually answer a couple of things. Well, I've heard that there's a video tag, so I can embed video without the aid of a browser plugin, and that's absolutely true. We'll look at that in a few moments. The other thing they're liable to tell you is I've heard that HTML5 has this thing called a canvas that finally allows me to draw pixels directly into a browser window. And that is absolutely true, but HTML5 actually offers a little bit more than that. So in Silverlight, when it comes to drawing, you do your drawing in XAML. Now you can do declarative XAML, you can declare your ellipses, your rectangles, and other things. You can create XAML objects dynamically and add them to the visual tree. There is not in Silverlight today an immediate mode graphics API. XAML is all about vectors, and it is a retained mode graphics system. Silverlight 5 does introduce for the first time 3D graphics into the Silverlight runtime. It does not use standards-based APIs for doing that, like OpenGL or something else. It actually borrows the XNA 3D API. It's very powerful, it's very performant, very fast. But for folks who have experience with more open 3D APIs like OpenGL, they'll probably feel a little bit more at home with WebGL and HTML5, which is just now beginning to pick up momentum. But I think has a potential to be game-changing, being able to do fully hardware-accelerated 3D graphics right there inside the browser. That's not the only way to draw in HTML5. We do have canvases, which give us a pixel-addressable API. I'm going to show you some examples of that. And one thing that a lot of people don't realize, or at least overlook, is that there is a way to do retained mode graphics in HTML5. Most browsers today, most modern browsers support SVG, Scalable Vector Graphics. If you've never looked at SVG, it looks a whole lot like XAML. So you kind of have the best of both worlds in HTML5. You have an immediate mode API that lets you draw directly into that browser window. In many browsers, you have XAML type graphics in the form of SVG. And very soon, you'll have WebGL. In fact, WebGL is supported in some browsers today, although most of them require a plugin to support it. That probably will not be true in the future. Now, side-by-side comparison here. How do you draw using these two platforms? Here's a little piece of XAML. If you've done Silverlight or WPF before, you've probably seen something like this many, many times. I'm declaring a rectangle object in XAML. I'm using the property element syntax to assign to its fill property a linear gradient brush object, which produces this linear gradient that you see right here. Now, how would I do the same thing in HTML5? Well, if I'm using the Canvas API, I would do it this way. Notice with the Canvas API, I don't have a way to declaratively produce graphics, but I can do it imperatively, that is, programmatically. This is the equivalent JavaScript code to that XAML you saw in the previous slide. You can see that I'm creating a linear gradient object in HTML5. I'm drawing or filling a rectangle and using that fill to do it. On the outside, of course, this rectangle looks just like the one that I produced in XAML, and the user may have no idea whatsoever how I produced it. Now, SVG, if you prefer to use SVG instead, here's how you do the same thing in an HTML5 browser, declaratively rather than programmatically. I'm not using the Canvas API here. I'm using SVG instead. And notice how much it looks like XAML. I'm declaring a rect object in SVG the same way I would declare a rectangle in XAML, and I'm declaring a linear gradient object similar to a linear gradient brush in XAML, and then assigning that to the style property of this SVG rectangle so that it's filled. But it goes even further. In XAML, we can not only draw objects, we can transform objects. In fact, in XAML, we can use rotate transforms to rotate things, translate transforms to move them, scale transforms to scale them independently in the X and Y directions, skew transforms to skew them, and we can create custom transforms to do additional transforms for us if we want to. Well, this in XAML is how I might show an ellipse that is rotated a bit. Notice I declare the ellipse, and then I simply use a rotate transform to rotate it 45 degrees. Could I do the same thing in HTML5 using the Canvas API? I could. This is what that code looks like, and it's basically equivalent to the XAML on the previous slide, but I'm actually having to use three transforms here. It's a little bit more manual using the Canvas API than it is with XAML. I first have to translate the origin of the coordinate system by calling, making the call to translate on the rendering context that you see here. Then you see me calling rotate to rotate the coordinate system 45 degrees so that everything I draw subsequently will be rotated that much. And then notice the call to scale. This is the HTML5 way of applying the equivalent of a scale transform in XAML. Believe it or not, there is not a method you can call in the HTML5 Canvas API to draw an ellipse. You can use the arc method to draw a circle, but if you want to actually render an ellipse, you can scale the width or the height, as I'm doing here, to turn that circle into an ellipse. Could you do the same thing with SVG? Absolutely, and notice again how much it looks like XAML. In fact, the syntax is even a little bit more terse than XAML. I declare an ellipse, and then I use its transform attribute to describe how I want it transformed. So we see three different ways of doing exactly the same thing. Now, here's something else that both Silverlight and HTML5 will do for you. They give you pixel addressable APIs so that you can generate images on the fly, so that you can take existing images and change them. You could even build a photo editor, for example, that allows a user to load an image and then remove red eyes from the pictures or something like that. In Silverlight, if you want to do pixel addressable graphics, you use the writable bitmap class to do it. Some of you have used this before, I'm sure. What I'm doing here is creating a new writable bitmap object. Then, through its pixels property, which exposes to me as a one-dimensional array, all of the pixels in this writable bitmap in row first order, I'm just assigning random colors to each of those pixels. At the end, I call invalidate on the writable bitmap. I assign that writable bitmap to a XAML image object, and lo and behold, over on the right, you see that random image that I've generated. Here is the equivalent code in HTML5. What I'm doing here is calling the createImageData method of the rendering context 2D. Then that is giving me an image data object, which is very much the HTML5 equivalent of a writable bitmap in Silverlight. As with a writable bitmap, I can take an image data object and I can access all of the pixels in it individually using a single dimensional array by indexing into that array. And then at the end, I can display this new image that I've generated to the user. So you get the exact same results as you did on the previous slide. The difference is here we're doing it with JavaScript and HTML5 and its Canvas API rather than with XAML or writable bitmap. Now let me show you something here. In fact, you may be surprised by something you're about to see. I want to show you the same application, essentially, written in both Silverlight and in HTML5 using the Canvas API in HTML5. And by the way, and I'll be sure to put this up again at the end, if you would like a copy of all these samples I'll be showing, you can get them from this URL right here. It's a zip file, 19 to 20 megabytes. It contains all the samples I'm showing at this conference and that I showed in Antwerp earlier this week, including all of these HTML5 samples I'll be showing and many more. And I'll put this back up at the end in case you didn't have time to write it down. So let's go over here back into a Visual Studio. And I first want to open a Silverlight project called Mandelbrot Demo. And what you're going to see here in Silverlight is a Mandelbrot fractal viewer designed to be fairly CPU intensive, because if you've ever written something like this, you know that I'm basically looping, in this case, up to 128 times through each and every pixel in the image that's about to be generated in order to create this view. This view is nothing more than a XAML image object, which I am generating on the fly in response to user input. So there's the view from space of the famous Mandelbrot fractal. I could do a selection like that. I could zoom in again. I'm generating this image that you see each time on the fly because this is the code is in compiled C#. You can see that it's relatively fast. It's taking me half a second to a second, perhaps, to generate each of these images. Now, let's look at the same thing in HTML5. So I'm going to go to my Canvas folder and open something called mandelbrot.html. Now, don't be put off by what you see here initially. It is going to take a few seconds for this initial view to render here in Internet Explorer. Maybe 5 or 10 seconds. There we go. And now, if I click in there to zoom in, you're going to see that, you know, it's taking, again, 5 to 10 seconds to generate that view. Now, why is the performance difference so dramatic? It's because you're looking at the execution speed of JavaScript, of course, rather than the execution speed of compiled C#. Is that image going to change? I think I clicked. I did click because the cursor changed. Well, I don't know about... Oh, there we go. That was more than 10 seconds. But let me show you something here, folks, and this is what may surprise you. I'm currently running this in IE9, and I'm not... What I'm about to do is not to beat up on IE9, but I want to show you the same thing in Firefox 4. It's running as fast or faster than the compiled C#. This astonished me first time I saw it. Now, let me explain a little bit about what's going on here performance-wise. I talked to the IE team about this. It turns out that virtually every modern browser today does JIT JavaScript. Which makes a lot of sense when you think about it. But because JavaScript is a typeless language, different browser vendors make different assumptions about how to optimize the JIT code. It just so happens that Firefox optimizes for floating point math, and the calculations that I'm performing are very floating point heavy. IE9 optimizes for other things, not for floating point math. That's why you see this big speed difference. By the way, I did this demo at Microsoft a couple weeks ago, and some people in the room got very angry. But they need to see this, right? Now, if you watched the Mix keynote from Las Vegas last week or the week before, you saw IE doing very, very well in some performance tests compared to Chrome and other browsers. And it is true, all of these browsers do all kinds of magic things to make HTML5 and JavaScript perform very well. All of them make different assumptions, and any one of those browser vendors can write benchmarks that are going to make their browser look really good. What you're going to find in the real world is that in some cases, you see big differences in performance like this. In other cases, you see little or no difference at all. And sometimes it is IE9 that's outperforming everybody else. IE9 does some great things with performance with CSS, for example. But when it comes to raw JavaScript code using floating point math, you can see that Firefox is doing a really good job. If you run this same demo in Opera 11 or Chrome 10, you'll see that their performance falls about halfway in between Firefox and IE9. Firefox is doing a remarkable job of handling this kind of code right here. Does that surprise you just a little bit how fast that thing was? You know, hats off to the folks at Mozilla, at Firefox. They've done a terrific job there. Let's go back to the slides here for just a moment, because that's just the tip of the iceberg. What about animations? In XAML, it's very easy to animate things. Silverlight has a really nice high-performance animation engine built in. You can do almost everything you would ever want to do declaratively, but when you need to do something more complex, maybe you're building a game and you're doing hit testing, there are facilities in Silverlight for doing programmatic animations as well. You can also animate in HTML5. Now, there are some tricks to doing it right and doing it performantly in HTML5, and I'm going to show you some examples. First off, here is the way animations work in Silverlight. Here's a very simple example. If I want to make this yellow rectangle that you see here move across the screen, after declaring it in XAML, I declare in XAML a storyboard object. A storyboard is a container for zero or more animations. Then I declare a double animation object. Double animation in Silverlight doesn't mean I'm animating something twice, by the way. It means I'm going to animate or vary over time a property of an object whose type is double. Well, what I'm going to do is vary over time the canvas.left property of this rectangle to make it move across the page. And the double animation is doing that since canvas.left is of type double. Very simple to declare this animation. Silverlight then, once I trigger the animation, performs the animation for me. By default, at 60 times a second, it is recomputing the position of the rectangle and moving it for me, and also doing some interesting things under the hood to try to make it as smooth and as performant as possible. Now, the animation story in HTML5 is not quite as good, at least not if you're using the Canvas API as opposed to SVG. But it is doable. The basic approach we take to animating in HTML5 generally is to repeatedly erase and redraw. Remember, the Canvas API is an immediate mode API rather than a retained mode API. And we have easy-to-use methods in HTML5 for making that easy. There's a clear rect method we can call on a rendering context, for example, to erase what we drew in the last frame. Then we simply redraw it in the next frame. And because there is no built-in animation engine in HTML5, what we generally do here is use a JavaScript timer to do the 20 or 25 or 30 frame per second animation or whatever we want to do. I'm going to show you some examples in a moment. If you are using SVG, well, once more, animations work a lot there like they work in XAML. I can declare graphical vector objects in SVG. I can also declare animations using the animation motion element as I'm doing right here. Let me show you something here. I want to show you something in HTML5. In fact, a couple of things in HTML5 demonstrating the different ways to do animations. I want you to see how performant or non-performant they are. and get kind of an idea of what's going on here. So Mandelbrot demo, that's not the one I want. I want to go back to here. And I want to run something called movinganimation2.html. And in a moment, what you're going to see is the browser window come up, and you're going to see an HTML5 canvas being animated. Now, I am using that repeated erase and redraw technique here. The good news is that's not really evident to the user. The performance is pretty good. I'm getting the 30 frames per second or so that I want. The code for this is a little bit interesting if you've never seen this done in HTML5 before. Let me show you how this one works. If you look inside this HTML file so you can see the JavaScript, basically I've declared an HTML5 canvas object with a width and height of 400 pixels. That was that entire wooden board that you saw there. The little ball that I'm drawing is 100 pixels square. So what I'm doing here is when the application starts up, I draw the ball in its original location, then I call window.setInterval in JavaScript to ask for a callback every 10 milliseconds. That doesn't mean I'm going to get it that often, but I'm basically going for the highest frame rate I can get here. Each time that timer fires, I'm calling clear rect on my rendering context to erase the ball from its previous position. Then I compute the new position, taking into account the fact that if it is impacted a side of that board, I'll need to reverse the X and or Y direction. Then I redraw the ball in the new position. And down here is the canvas code that's actually drawing the ball itself. So it's kind of manual. Yeah, I'm having to repeatedly erase and redraw, but it actually works pretty well. But I would submit to you that this is not the best way to do animation in HTML5. Let me show you something here. I want to show you an improved version of this, movinganimation3.html. Looks exactly the same on the outside, but I'm actually being a lot smarter and a lot more clever about how I'm doing the animation this time. In fact, I believe that if I compared CPU utilization with this demo and the previous one, you would find that this one is probably using half or less of the CPU time that the previous one was. Take a look inside here to see what I mean. Better example of how to do animation in HTML5. Notice that my canvas now measures only 100 pixels by 100 pixels. I'm still showing it in a 400 by 400 board, but now the canvas itself is just used to draw the ball and nothing more. I'm still using a timer to do the animation, but I'm no longer erasing and redrawing the ball. Instead, I am modifying the CSS left and top properties of the canvas to move the canvas around inside that 400 by 400 rectangle. So in other words, I'm doing CSS animations. I'm not having to repeatedly erase and redraw. I'm drawing the ball once, then modifying the CSS properties of the canvas to move it around. This is a better way to do animation in HTML5. But there's even more. You can make it easier than I've done there. Take a look at this example here. I call it puzzleanimation.html. So it's an app that takes an image, any image you feed into it, and it carves it up into pieces that you can move around like this. Notice the animations being used to move the pieces. And let me show you how this one works, because this is probably, it is the best example I have in this demo set showing the proper way to do these animations in HTML5. When you look inside this one, puzzle animation, you'll see that I have 11 canvases declared, one for each of the puzzle pieces or puzzle tiles. When this page starts up, I use the canvas API to load an image, the big image that you saw. Then I carve it into little pieces, drawing one tile from the larger image into each of those 11 canvases. Then I use jQuery to wire up a click handler so that I know when one of those puzzle pieces is clicked. Inside the click handler, I'm using jQuery animation to animate the CSS properties and make the puzzle move. So not only am I not doing any erasing and redrawing, I'm doing CSS animations, which oftentimes are GPU accelerated, but I'm even letting jQuery do the hard work of doing the animation for me. So you combine jQuery animations with HTML5's Canvas API, and you get some very, very powerful results. So I could go on and on with examples about that, but I've got a lot more to cover, so I'm going to move on. I hope that's useful to you in understanding how to do animations in HTML5. But there's so much, much more when you compare these two platforms side by side. Another big item is client-side storage. Ingo probably talked about this in the previous session, but let me say just a word about it. Silverlight gives you something called isolated storage, which provides a virtual file system on the client that a Silverlight application can use to store data locally. Now, Silverlight does impose limitations on the amount of data that can be written. The concern, of course, is that a malicious app, if it were not limited, might be able to fill up the user's hard disk or on a Windows phone, fill up flash memory just by writing junk to it. But one nice thing about what Silverlight does there is that it allows you to store anything on the client side in any format. The data is not encoded in any special way. If you write out binary data to isolated storage, it's stored as binary data. And you can add structure to the data, because not only do you have a couple of dictionaries that you can write simple name-value pairs to in Silverlight isolated storage, you can create virtual files in isolated storage and virtual folders in which to store those files. Now, there is a client-side storage story in HTML5 as well. We don't call it isolated storage there. We call it local storage. It's a little bit simpler and more limited in scope than Silverlight isolated storage. Local storage does not give you access to a virtual file system. The only thing you can store there are name-value pairs. And anything you write there, even if it's not string data, is actually stored as a string, so the volume of the data goes up. HTML5 does impose limitations on how much data any given application can write to local storage as well, for the same reasons as Silverlight does. The HTML5 spec recommends that browsers limit each origin, each domain, if you will, to 5 megabytes, but the browser vendors are not strictly required to abide by that, so the actual amount of data stored, or you're limited to, can vary some by browser. Unlike Silverlight, which actually lets you query it to see how much quota you have remaining in isolated storage, there is no way to get that information in HTML5. You just have to be prepared for an exception to be thrown when you write to local storage if you happen to exceed the quota. So what does it look like? Here's a very, very simple use of isolated storage in Silverlight. I'm not creating a virtual file or virtual directory per se. I'm using something called the Application Settings Dictionary, which is Silverlight's way of allowing me to store simple name-value pairs in isolated storage. Here I'm writing in an integer value I call count. Maybe I'm keeping a count of the number of times this application is run. Later when the application starts up again, I read that value right back out. And because it was an int that I wrote into isolated storage, it's an int that I get back out. Now, here's the equivalent code in JavaScript with HTML5. I go through the local storage property of the window object, and I add a new name value pair to local storage. When I read it back, it works pretty much the same way it does in Silverlight, but notice that because that int was actually serialized into a string when it was written into local storage by the browser, I have to coerce it back into an int when I pull it out. That's why you see me making that call to parse int right there. Other than that, this code, these two code samples, are basically identical. Now again, Silverlight lets you go much, much further than this, but my experience is most devs that are using local storage in Silverlight aren't using much more than the application settings dictionary anyway. Now, let me show you here an example, and I'll just go with an HTML5 example again right here to show how this works. I'm going to run something called storagescribble.html. It's an HTML5 port, essentially, of the old Scribble tutorial that used to come with Visual C++ years and years ago. When it starts up, it shows me a chalkboard. And I'm using the Canvas API to allow the user to draw. In fact, let me close that. Let's see here if we can draw HTML5. Not very easy to draw with the mouse. It'd be a great application for touch right here. But we draw HTML5. All I'm doing here, by the way, is in response to mouse events, which I'm processing with jQuery. I'm using the Canvas API to add new strokes. Now, what you can't see from the outside is that for each stroke that's drawn, I'm also writing a record of that stroke into isolated storage. That means, not isolated storage, local storage. That means that if I close this thing down and then I restart it, I should be able to bring back up what the user had drawn into that chalkboard earlier. And there it is. All I'm doing now is each time the page starts up, I check to see if there's data in local storage that I could use to reproduce those strokes, and I do it. So we get a persistent client-side store without having to resort to cookies or anything else. One nice thing about local storage in HTML5 is, unlike cookie data, it's not limited to small volumes like 4K, and also it doesn't pollute the requests and responses. Local storage stays on the client side and doesn't travel up and down in every request and every response, or at least every request, as cookies do. Now, let me show you something else. Actually, I'm going to say that I'm going to go back to the slides first and then show you something else. Because another interesting area in which to compare these two platforms is inter-process communication. In Silverlight 3 introduced something called local connections, which allow us to forge messaging pipes between Silverlight controls, pipes that can even span process boundaries. So it's relatively easy today to create a Silverlight application that talks to another Silverlight application, as long as those two applications are running on the same machine. If they're running on different machines, then in both Silverlight and HTML5, since neither supports peer-to-peer networking per se, you have to use a server as an intermediary to forge that channel of communications. But as long as the two Silverlight clients are running on the same machine, local connections make it easy for them to message back and forth. HTML5, strictly speaking, does not address inter-process communication. There are messaging mechanisms in HTML5, but they're pretty much concerned with networking and with talking between windows in the same process. There is, however, a way to do inter-process communication in HTML5, and I want to show it to you in just a moment. Here, first, is how I use local connections to forge a messaging pipeline between two Silverlight applications, even if they're running in different processes. The application that wants to send messages to the other Silverlight app creates a local message sender object and then uses that object's send async method to send an asynchronous message whenever it has a message to deliver. In Silverlight, these messages can only be strings, which means that if you want to pass binary data using local connections, you do have to manually serialize the data before it goes out and then deserialize it when it comes in. The good news is that's not generally a very big deal. A Silverlight application that wants to receive these messages creates a local message receiver object using the same agreed-upon name as the Silverlight sender, and then it registers a handler for message received events. Now, each time the sender calls local message sender dot send async to transmit the message, that receiver will see a message received event fire, and it will receive the message passed to it by the sender. Now, I said HTML5 doesn't address IPC, but there is a sneaky way to do it, because if you read the local storage spec in HTML5, you'll find that not only does it provide HTML5 apps with a way to persist data on the client side, but it also defines events that are fired each time local storage is modified. So every time an HTML5 app writes a name value pair into local storage, or each time it deletes a name value pair, or any time it changes the value of a name value pair, an event fires. And it just so happens that those events do allow us to span process boundaries. So if we want to do inter-process communication in HTML5, on the sending side, we write something into local storage, a message, if you will. On the receiving side, we register a JavaScript handler for the storage events. And now we will see those events fired when the sender puts that message in local storage for us. Let me show you here. In fact, we'll do this both in Silverlight and in HTML5. So I'm going to go open a Silverlight project first named Local Connections Demo. And the nice thing about this is this. Instead of running this default test page, I'm going to run a couple of others. I want to run a page named Sender Test Page. And let's get ourselves some real estate like that. Let's grab that URI and let's open another copy of IE. Matter of fact, let's not even open IE. Let's open Firefox or Chrome. And I'm going to bring up another test page in here called Receiver Test Page, which also shows that little chalkboard. So I have two Silverlight apps running in two different browsers and in two different processes. And as you might suspect, this one communicates each stroke that's drawn via a local message sender out to this one, which is receiving messages with a local message receiver. And with almost no latency at all, you can see that the two are communicating. Now, could we do the same thing in HTML5? Actually, we could, at least to an extent. Let me go back over to my HTML5 demos here. And I want to run a pair of pages here. We'll run a storage scribble again. And let's also run this page called Scribble Receiver. So let's just do this. Let me start up a second copy of IE. Let's see. Let's go back to the first one. And I've already grabbed that URI, I believe. Let's copy it in and let's change it to, no, I did not grab it. So we'll go here and grab it, then back to here. And the one I want to run here is a separate page called Scribble Receiver. Now remember that the first page, the one right here, is writing each stroke that the user draws into local storage, primarily so that it can persist it and read it back when the application starts again. But this page on the right, Scribble Receiver, is registering event handlers for the messages or for the events that are firing as a result of what this app is putting in local storage. So I'm going to clear this one off over here, and then, well, one thing you'll find is that this is sometimes not reliable in IE9. So let's go try it in Firefox. Clear it off there. And let's see here. That's IE as well. Let's also do this in Firefox. But I'll bring up that Scribble Receiver page here. And when I draw in one instance of Firefox, it appears in the other. There's a little bit more latency. It actually does work most of the time in IE9, but you'll see a latency of up to several seconds between the time the sender writes something into local storage and the receiver gets the event telling it that something was written. In general, Chrome and Firefox offer you much less latency, but generally they will not offer you the almost zero latency that Silverlight will. But the fact remains, if you need a way to do inter-process communication in HTML5, this is probably the best way to do it. In fact, I'm not even sure there's another way to do it without dropping down to native code. One drawback here, by the way, is that the volume of data that I'm putting in local storage is higher in HTML5 because everything's being serialized into a string. Also, whereas with Silverlight local connections, you saw that I can go between browser types from IE to Firefox, for example, that does not work in HTML5. You cannot use HTML5 to communicate from Firefox to Chrome or IE to Firefox, because while the HTML5 spec does a very good job of laying out the local storage API, it doesn't say anything about how the browser vendor has to implement it. So every browser manages local storage in a different way. IE9 has no idea how Firefox does it, and so forth and so on. But as long as the messaging is between two instances of the same browser type, you can see that it does work relatively well. Now, let me tell you this a little bit. Again, not to beat up on IE, because there's some things IE does very well. But I found the hard way a handful of areas in which IE9 does not conform to spec for local storage. For example, the spec says that when an HTML5 app removes a name value pair from local storage, the event that's fired as a result identifies by key the name of that name value pair. And it passes a null value for the value. That tells you it's been deleted. IE, unfortunately, passes empty strings rather than null. And again, it's not to beat up on IE. This has always been the case with HTML and JavaScript, right? Even as HTML5 makes HTML far more powerful than it ever has been, I still spend way too much time trying to overcome and understand the differences between the various browsers. And that's why I often tell people, and I know Ingo does too, if you're going to do serious HTML5 development, you need jQuery. jQuery will make your life so much more bearable because jQuery does a great job of abstracting a lot of these differences for you. It won't do everything, but it will do a lot. So, what else can we get into here? What about multi-threading? Did you ever believe that the day would come when you could write multi-threaded JavaScript code? It's pretty amazing. The HTML5 spec, I should say the HTML5 family of specifications, because as you may know, there is not one HTML5 spec. There is a core HTML5 spec, but there are also dozens of other specs around it. In fact, it's hard to define what HTML5 really is. A lot of these things we talk about, like web workers, are specifications which are generally accepted to be part of HTML5, but oftentimes are not officially a part of it. Web workers are a feature of HTML5 that brings multi-threaded programming to JavaScript. Not supported by all browsers, it's not supported by IE9, but you may know that Microsoft is rolling out IE10 soon. And they're going to be updating it potentially every few weeks because HTML5 is such a moving target right now. This will give Microsoft the ability to roll out new versions of IE with support for the new features coming in HTML5 without impacting enterprise customers who need a stable browser. But some of the other browsers do support web workers already. So what is threading like in Silverlight and HTML5, and how do they compare? Well, Silverlight has supported multi-threading since version 2. The threading API is pretty rich. It's based on the .NET threading API. So in Silverlight, you can call thread.start, just like you can in .NET, to create a brand new thread of execution. You can call threadpool.qUserWorkItem in Silverlight to pull a thread out of the CLR thread pool so that you can avoid the overhead of creating threads time and time again. There are even classes like backgroundWorker in Silverlight, which manage some of the harder things about threading for you. And Silverlight has a subset of the synchronization classes featured in the big .NET framework so that you can write very complex, heavily concurrent multi-threaded code and make sure that different threads don't collide over data. In HTML5, you can use web workers to do the same thing. Now, the API is much, much simpler and more limited than Silverlight's threading API. But the fact remains that you can now write multi-threaded JavaScript code. We don't call them threads in HTML5. We call them workers or web workers. What you do is you create web worker objects, and then you trust the browser to give you threads in the best way possible. Most of them under the hood are calling, at least on the Windows platform, qUserWorkItem to avoid the overhead of creating new threads over and over again. And when you run tests, you'll find that different browsers do this in different ways. The performance varies and stuff. I said that the HTML5 threading API or Web Workers API is more limited in scope. Here's what I mean by that. There are no synchronization classes in Web Workers. Now, that may seem a little bit scary. How, if you have two threads of execution going in the background, do you prevent those two threads from colliding over a piece of data? How do you keep one thread, for example, from reading that data at the same time the other thread is writing it? Well, the answer is you don't. In HTML5 and its Web Worker API, it is essentially impossible for two threads to access the same piece of data at the time. In fact, the threads run in very different scopes. A background thread created in HTML5, for example, cannot use the window object, cannot use the document object. It has its own very special context that prevents you, the developer, from doing things that might cause collisions over data and other things. What you can do with HTML5 when you have background threads running is using HTML5's post message API to post messages from one thread to another. And that, at the end of the day, as the mechanism that we use to synchronize the actions of these threads. One thing you may know about Silverlight is that background threads there are somewhat limited in scope. You cannot, for example, access the visual tree from a non-UI thread in Silverlight. Instead, you call dispatcher begin invoke or something like that to get back to the UI thread to do those accesses. The same basically applies to HTML5 as well. What you're executing on a background thread does not have access to window variables, window methods. You can't call document.getElementById there to access the HTML DOM. But you can, from the background thread, call post message to post back to the browser's UI thread to gain access to that XAML DOM. Here is how, if you've never seen it, it's one way to do multi-threading in Silverlight. I'm not using a thread pool thread here. I'm creating a thread object and I'm calling thread.start, creating a brand new thread of execution in this process. What I'm doing here is executing some code on a background thread that is computing prime numbers. And every time I arrive at a new prime number, I want to display that prime number to the user. But that means making a change to the XAML DOM, and I cannot do that from a background thread in Silverlight. If I do, all I'll succeed in doing is throwing an invalid access exception. What I can do, however, is call dispatcher.beginInvoke to get back to the UI thread, effectively post a message to that thread, passing that new prime number that I found so that the UI thread can update the XAML DOM. Here's what the same code looks like in HTML5. I create a new worker object. Now, the way you specify in HTML5 the equivalent of a thread method or a thread function in Silverlight is you pass in the URI of a JavaScript file containing the code that you wish to execute on a background thread. So, in this case, that file is primes.js, and you see on the second half of the slide some of the code from it. Once more, I'm running in a loop, computing prime numbers as quickly as I can, and each time I arrive at a new one, I want to display it to the user. But this background thread, this so-called worker in HTML5, again, does not have access to the HTML DOM. What it can do, however, is call its own postMessage method to post a message back to the UI thread, which can then call document.getElementById or some other mechanism to update the XAML or the HTML DOM. Let's look at an example or two here. In fact, I've got some simple HTML threading demos, but I want to show you a more complex one. I think you may find it interesting. So this one I'll find under workers. It's called multi-mandelbrot.html. Now here's what you're going to see. I showed you that Mandelbrot fractal viewer earlier. I told you we were using the Canvas API to generate a big image and to refresh that image every time the user clicked, indicating what part of the fractal they wanted to zoom in on. That was very, very CPU intensive. Lots of floating point math, up to 128 iterations for each and every pixel in the image. Wouldn't it be nice if we were really going to deploy that kind of application, if we could take advantage of multi-core machines? The only way you can take advantage of multiple cores is to use multi-threading. So how would we do that in HTML? I took that Mandelbrot viewer and I built a separate version that does this. It divides the scene into four equally sized quadrants. And rather than do any computations on the UI thread, it creates four workers, which will create up to four threads of execution in the background, depending on how that browser decides to implement workers. And it computes the pixels for one quadrant on each of those workers. As each worker finishes its computations, since it can't update that HTML DOM directly, it posts back to the UI thread an image data object containing the generated pixels, and the UI thread then uses the Canvas API to display those things. Let's see what it looks like. I'll do a control F5, and the first thing we'll find out is that IE doesn't support workers. I detect that, and I display this helpful error message up front. However, if we take that URL, let's just run this in Chrome and see how it looks. Chrome does a very good job of supporting workers. So does Firefox, by the way. So there we are. You can actually see that thing kind of come into view four pieces at a time, right? Let's click in here and zoom in a little bit more. You can see here, if you watch carefully, You can see how the four quadrants are being built on separate threads and posted back to the UI thread. Now, let me tell you this. Is this any more performant than the single-threaded version of this? Maybe, maybe not. On a multi-core machine, it could be more performant. There's no absolute guarantee of that. But one nice thing about this is this application is going to be more responsive because I'm doing all the heavy-duty computation on background threads. That leaves the UI thread free to respond to user input. And, yeah, I do potentially have an application that is going to run better and faster on multi-core machines here. So I think that the whole web worker thing in HTML5 is a pretty big deal, even though it is much more limited in Silverlight threading. If you're curious to see how this thing works, let me take a quick trip inside here into this multi-mandelbrot.html. Here's what you'll find. Up front, when the application starts up, I'm doing a little housekeeping work, grabbing a reference to a canvas and a rendering context so I can actually paint something into the browser window. The entire UI, by the way, is nothing more than a canvas object whose dimensions are set to equal the width and height of the browser window. But the real key is right here, where when the application starts up, I create four worker objects. Again, think of these as threads or potential threads in HTML5. Most browsers, by the way, will actually look at the number of cores in your machine and won't create more concurrent threads than there are cores, which is a very good idea. In fact, that's one reason most browsers under the hood are not starting a new thread. They're calling a QUser work item or an equivalent. But I'm conceptually creating four threads here. I call add event listener to register a handler for the message events that are going to fire on the UI thread each time one of these workers calls post message to post a message back. And then I tell each worker what to do. I basically call post message on each worker, telling it what quadrant I want it to render. And then I just sit back on the UI thread waiting for those message events to fire. Here is that event handler here. Here's where I'm taking the data that was computed by that background worker and actually blowing the pixels out to the screen. So again, I'm doing much less work on the UI thread, which should make the application more responsive. And I have the potential to take advantage of multiple cores here, actually have the images render more quickly. Just out of curiosity, I wonder how this thing looks if we do it in Firefox rather than Chrome. Actually, let's try Opera. I'm not sure I've even tried this in Opera. Let's find out if it might work. Opera seems to be doing pretty good. And it should look about the same in Firefox as well. Interesting thing to do here is to run this and to use perfmon or something to actually watch the thread count in the process. You'll generally see threads being started up the first time you click. Then those threads will usually hang around for a little while as long as you're clicking. They may die off after a couple of minutes only to be recreated again. So can we do multi-threading in HTML5? Yes. Is it as rich as it is in Silverlight? No. There are plenty of multi-threaded Silverlight examples around, not that many with HTML5. That's why I wanted to show you this example right here. But what else do we find if we look deeply into these platforms? One of the things we find is fairly rich media support in both. Probably the most well-known feature of HTML5 is the new video element, which allows us to embed video in a web page without having to resort to plugins like Silverlight or the Flash Video Player. A lot of people don't realize there's also an audio element in HTML5 that allows us to embed audio players in our applications, makes it very, very easy to do. Of course, over on the Silverlight side, you have the media element control, which also makes it very easy to play audio and video. And in Silverlight 5, for low latency video, you have the new sound effect class borrowed from XNA. So comparing apples to apples here, it looks like the apples of these two platforms are very, very similar. Now, let's talk about pros and cons about each one. One nice thing about Silverlight and its media element is that you can encode a video that you want to show to a user one time, and it's going to work in all browsers that support Silverlight. Silverlight also does some rather interesting things. If you have IIS smooth streaming extensions on the server, you can do smooth streaming, also known as adaptive streaming. Microsoft did this when they broadcast the Olympics out of Beijing and Vancouver in recent years, streaming over Silverlight. With adaptive streaming, If the user's bandwidth is changing, maybe because they're using a cable modem and their neighbor begins watching a movie over Netflix, dropping their bandwidth, Silverlight can actually adapt to that on the fly. Instead of dropping frames, it can lower the resolution of the image temporarily, for example, then restore the higher resolution of the video once the bandwidth is recovered. HTML5 doesn't do all that sort of thing, but HTML5 does something kind of cool that Silverlight does not. A Silverlight media element has no playback UI. If you want a play button and a pause button and a slider showing the position in the current video, you have to build all that yourself in Silverlight. By contrast, the video element in HTML5 includes all of that for you. You don't have to show it to the user, but all you have to do is include a controls attribute in the HTML5 video element, and you get a nice rudimentary playback UI. Sure, it varies a little bit from browser to browser, but it does save you from doing a lot of work. Probably the chief limitation of audio and video in HTML5 is that you cannot encode audio or video once and be guaranteed that it's going to play in every browser. There's a history behind this. Originally, HTML5 was going to define a standard set of codecs that browser vendors could use so that you could encode a video, say, using that codec, and rest assured it was going to play in IE and Chrome and others. But then the real world intervened. Browser vendors sometimes don't like each other. Sometimes they even argue. Can you believe that? Sometimes they don't agree with what the others are doing. Browser vendors said, no, we're not going to support one spec. Apple was one of the big drivers here. Apple said, you know, we spend a lot of money on H.264. We're going to support H.264. You HTML5 guys can go and do whatever you want to. There were other players involved, too. But ultimately, it came down to this. There is no standard set of codecs, per se, in HTML5. However, it does turn out that if you're willing to encode an audio or video twice, you can be guaranteed that it will play in any browser. So this is what video might look like in Silverlight. I declare a media element. I use the media element source attribute to point it to via URI, in this case, an H.264 video file. The media element will now stream it down for me. It will fire events as the video is buffered, when the video begins playing, when it ends, all those sorts of things. Here's how the same thing might look in HTML5. What I'm doing here is something that HTML5 developers are becoming pretty familiar with. If I want to make sure this works in every browser, I encoded both as an H.264 video and also as an AUG video. Now, AUG is a codec that was purchased by Google and basically put out in the public domain. It costs a lot of money for companies like Apple and Microsoft to offer H.264 codecs because it is a heavily patent-encumbered codec. The AUG codec is not patent-encumbered, but Microsoft has said they don't intend to support it in IE because even though Google is putting it out there for free, if you're Microsoft and you use it, and there are lawsuits emanating from it later on, the liability is not borne by Google, it is borne by Microsoft. But if you're willing to encode twice, you can guarantee that it plays in any browser. Safari and IE9, for example, will support H.264. Other browsers that don't support it will support the AUG format. So quick example here. Let's look at HTML5 video. So I've got a little page here called video, and I've got a short video that I'll play a snippet of this F-16 on my desktop flying. For those of you that weren't in my session yesterday, that model you see on my desktop is 100 inches long, so that's what, I guess less than 3 meters. It's pretty big. If I disassemble it, it just fits in my wife's SUV. It's got a real jet engine in it that produces 40 pounds of thrust, flies over 200 miles an hour, and it is one kick in the pants to see it fly. And because I know you really wanted to see it fly, I just happened to build an HTML5 video sample around it. So here in IE, it's actually playing the H.264 version of the video, is a few seconds of this jet. And this is HTML5, not Silverlight. Yeah. My favorite part coming up here, the takeoff. Listen to that engine roar. There's nothing like the smell of jet fuel in the morning, folks. Even better than coffee. Now, one thing I want you to notice here is this playback UI with a play, pause button and all that, a little slider that I can use to move back and forth. I didn't write any of that. That's just part of IE's HTML5 video element. If I played the same thing in another browser like Chrome or Firefox, it would look basically the same, but you would see they decided to style the playback controls just a little bit differently. But the fact remains, if I were doing the same thing in Silverlight, I would have to code up those controls myself. Now, looking under the hood at this to make sure that this will play in any browser, I did encode the video twice, once as an AUG video, once as an H.264. And if you look here in the video.html page, which you can look at in more detail at your leisure, you can see that. But this is a classic video element in HTML5 with multiple source child elements. We're doing that again to make sure that we can do this in any browser. By the way, if this is run in a down-level browser which doesn't recognize the video element, the user will see this instead. So you don't have to write code to detect support for these HTML5 features. Oftentimes, as with the canvas element, the video element, the audio element, and others, you can do it declaratively if you want to, like this. But that's not all. There's more. Offline applications are arguably one of the most important features of HTML5. Now, what is an offline application? It's one that can run absent an internet connection. I mean, think about this. If you're on a plane over the Atlantic, you don't have an internet connection, and you want to do a little bit of surfing to look something up on Wikipedia, you can't do it, can you? Because without that connection, you can't get to it. HTML5 has an offline story. So does Silverlight. In Silverlight 3 and higher, we can build Silverlight out-of-browser applications, often known as OOBs. And besides the fact that out-of-browser applications in Silverlight 4 and 5 can run in a larger sandbox, that is, they can run with trust and do things in-browser apps cannot, an out-of-browser app significantly in Silverlight can be installed, or in fact is installed locally on a user's machine, so it can be launched from a desktop shortcut, even if you have no internet connection at the time. Prior to HTML5, you really couldn't do that in HTML, but some of the browsers now support an HTML5 spec called offline applications, which is pretty cool when it works. Now, it's early. Some browsers support it, some don't. They support, the ones that do support it to varying degrees, but Firefox actually happens to support it very well. So, let's compare the two. How do you do offline applications in Silverlight? Well, you make it an out-of-browser application, and that is generally no more difficult than going into a property sheet in Visual Studio and checking a box that reads Enable Running Application out of the browser. Now, that application can be installed locally just like any Windows app, and it can be run whether there's an internet connection or not. Taking advantage of offline support in HTML5 is done differently, but it is equally effective. Offline apps in HTML5 center around special files called cache manifests. If you want an application to be available offline, you create a cache manifest that at the very least specifies the files that make up the application that should be downloaded and cached on the client side by the browser. Then, in each of the pages of the app, in the HTML element at the top, you point it to the manifest file. Now, what the browser will do is go fetch those files, download them, cache them on the client, so the next time you start that application, you can do it without any internet connection at all. And cache manifests can be considerably more complex than what I've shown here. You can list the files that do need to be downloaded and cached. You can list files that should not be cached. Maybe there are certain files or pages that are generated dynamically based on user input. You don't want those to be cached. You can specify that in a cache manifest as well. There's even a trick spelled out in the HTML5 offline application spec that allows a browser to cache pages on the fly. You know, if you're building something large like Wikipedia, which may have hundreds of thousands of pages, you don't want to ask the browser to download and cache hundreds of thousands of pages when the user first comes to your site. What you can do with the cache manifest is tell the browser to cache the pages that the user clicks to. Now, Only what the user sees is actually downloaded and cached. So at least that part of that very large site will be available to that user offline. Now, the chief downside to HTML5 offline applications, besides the fact they're not universally supported today, is a little tricky thing having to do with updates. But I'll show you what I mean and also a way around it. Let me show you something here. I'm going to run a page here. It's an HTML5 page called offlinescribble.html. It's that Scribble application I showed you earlier, built to be an offline application. And immediately when it comes up in IE, you see that IE does not support offline applications. I feel pretty confident that will change in IE10 because this is such an important feature. But what we can do, by the way, you see why I get in trouble sometimes for doing this presentation at Microsoft, right? Let's go to Firefox, which actually offers quite good offline application support. So I'm going to run this application here, and I'm going to scribble in it. And what you can't see is that it has already been offline cached. If you look in the page itself, make sure I've got that on the clipboard so I can go back to it in just a moment. If you look in the page itself, you'll see that in the HTML element at the top of the page, here, I'm using the new HTML5 manifest attribute to point to a file. Actually, I'm pointing to the wrong one. So I had actually updated this and failed to update this one. I should actually be pointing just to scribble.manifest. Now, let me show you what scribble.manifest is. Works the same either way, by the way. Scribble.manifest is a simple application cache manifest that makes this an offline app and that tells the browser which other files this depends on that need to be downloaded and cached on the client side. So here's the cool thing, folks. I'm actually running against IIS Express right now. Let's see if I can shut that thing down. Is that IIS Express? No. Which one is it? Not that one either. There we go. I'm going to shut down IIS Express. At least I am if it cooperates with me just a little bit. There we go. I just shut down IIS Express. Right now, if I were to try to bring that page, offline scribble, up in IE9, since it doesn't support offline applications, the HTTP request it sends off wouldn't be answered by anyone, and all I would get is a 404. But I'm going to do it in Firefox instead. Here's a fresh instance of Firefox. I'll paste the URL in there, and there's the application, even though there was no web server to serve it up. Now, I could go further. In fact, I do want to go further. Let's go back to the browser for a moment and Visual Studio and start this thing up again, get IIS Express going. So we'll attempt to launch it in IE, mainly to get IIS Express going again. Interesting. I may have to manually start it up. Let's try that one more time. Okay, there's the 404 I was telling you about, right? Let's see if we can get IIS Express running again. I'll go back to that video page. There we go. Now, one more time. Let's see if we bring up in IE that offline scribble, see if we get something other than a 404. There we go. So IIS Express is back up and running again. Now let's bring the thing up in Firefox. And let me show you a little trick that's very, very important to know about if you're going to leverage this feature of HTML5. One thing that you may not know unless you read the spec is when an HTML5 offline application starts up, it actually does not go back to the server to see if there's an updated version available, at least not in the way you might think. One of the things that drives people mad the first time they run into this, let's say I change something about this page, offlinescribble.html. Maybe, for example, instead of using that dark, dark gray background, I want to use a red background instead. So I'll change the page on the server. And you might think now that if I click the refresh button in Firefox, it would go pull down the new page, kind of like Silverlight does with Zaps, but it does not. Here's the trick. What a, a browser that does support offline applications will do is go back to the server and see if there is an updated version of the manifest file, in this case, scribble.manifest. It will pull it down, but interestingly enough, it does not discern anything from the time and date stamp. It actually compares the version of the manifest it just pulled down to the one that it read the last time, the one that it has cached. And only if there's an actual difference of at least one byte in those two files will it then go pull down fresh resources. So that's why in the real world, when developers are using this, you often see them put at least one comment line with a version number inside the application manifest. So I'm going to change that version number from 1.0 to 1.1 in scribble.manifest. Now I'm going to go back and I'm going to click refresh a time or two in Firefox. I'm actually processing an event here. Firefox is telling me, hey, because I found a new manifest that has a material change to it, I just downloaded fresh content for you. Now the frustrating thing is, if I click refresh again, I may see the new page. I do. Sometimes you may have to click 3, 4, even 5 times, even in Firefox. Sometimes the change shows up the first time. But what I want you to remember is, if you're going to use this offline application support in HTML5, don't forget that the only way to update the application, if you've posted a newer page or something on the server, is to update the application manifest, simply saving it. Updating the time and date stamp is not enough. You must make a change to at least one byte in that file. Make sense? Now, let's get back here and try to finish up because we just have a couple of minutes left. Geolocation. Both Silverlight for Windows Phone, not Silverlight for the desktop, and HTML5 have a geolocation API. Actually very, very similar. Once you learn one, you can learn the other in 5 minutes. The only substantial difference is that in Silverlight for Windows Phone, when you turn on the geolocation service to find out where you are, you can set a property called movement threshold, which tells the runtime how often to let you know about changes in position. That's actually a big deal in terms of conserving battery power. If you're building a Garmin-type navigation application for your car, in Silverlight, you might set that movement threshold to, say, 20 meters, because in a car going down the highway, you're covering 20 meters pretty quickly, and you really don't need updates more often than that. Now, HTML5's geolocation API will do basically everything Silverlight's will, with the exception of letting you set that movement threshold. So if you use it on a mobile device, HTML5's geolocation API could potentially not be as efficient with battery power, although I don't have any real-world test data to back it up. I've shown a couple of examples there, just showing how to get your position in Silverlight for Windows Phone and in HTML5. If you look at the code, they're almost identical, but let's just run one of these things here. Could run it on the phone, but instead I'm going to run it in HTML5. If you look under location here, here I'm combining HTML5's geolocation API with Bing Maps. Now notice here, IE is saying that this application wants to track my physical location. Unlike Apple, we're actually letting people opt into this. So I'll click Allow once. And now, actually using Wi-Fi positioning, this API is trying to figure out where I am. And it looks like it's at least close. There's The Hague. If we go in just a little bit, I'm using Bing Maps to actually show that location. It looks like there's some latency. I should see that sharpening up. I can't tell. Actually, it looks like I think that's close to where we are. Can't tell for sure. I don't know The Hague well enough. But pretty cool here. By the way, my laptop here does not have a GPS connection. It does not have any a cellular radio, which would allow it to triangulate off cell towers. Wi-Fi positioning is being used. That's generally good to within a couple hundred meters, but not bad considering that we don't have access to GPS on this. If this were running on a phone which has GPS, it could be much, much more accurate than it is. Now, we're really out of time here, but that's pretty good because I'm near the end. I just want to throw out a couple more things. Both Silverlight and HTML5 have networking stacks built in. I would argue Silverlight is richer, but there's a lot of cool stuff you can do with HTML5. When it comes to calling web services like REST, you can do it from either. One of the cool things, actually a couple of cool things coming in HTML5, are WebSockets, which allow you to do two-way duplex asynchronous communications between a web client and a web server without resorting to comment or long polling or anything like that. Something else coming in HTML5 is cross-domain XML HTTP request or cross-domain AJAX. These are not universally supported yet, but I think that they will be probably in the future. And I have a couple examples here in the slides of how to make calls out to REST services on both of those platforms. One final thing, input scope. In Silverlight for Windows Phone, you can use input scope properties on text elements to tell the phone what software keyboard to display when that input element has the focus. You can do the same thing in HTML. At least it works pretty well on the iPhone, not on other platforms yet. In HTML5, you can use new input types like input type equals tell. The iPhone says, aha, user's going to input a phone number. I'll display the phone number keyboard. I've listed a few more things here, features that are unique to both. But let me close out by saying this. These are both great platforms. There's no doubt about that. I really don't care to get involved in the religious wars. Should I use Silverlight? Should I use HTML5? I think the right answer, and Microsoft thinks the right answer, is you need to understand both of them, and you need to pick the platform that's going to help you do your job most effectively and what's going to make your customers the happiest. Regardless of which one of these you choose, I hope you learned a little bit about both of them so that you can see them side by side and you can make a more informed decision. And with that, we'll say that's enough, because you probably have snacks out there. Thank you so much.